People.
Don't you know?
Places.
Don't you know?
Events.
Don't you know?
From the campus of Winona State University, KQAL-FM is proud to present...
Don't you know?
This week on Don't You Know, we take a trip to the historic Opera House in Manterville, Minnesota. Jane Olive has been working for the Opera House for 7 years, first with the theater company and then with the Manterville Restoration Association, the company that has owned the Opera House since the late 1980s. The Opera House was once a movie theater, a roller rink, and a basketball court. Jane walks us through the history of the building, which even includes a theory that the building was a speakeasy during the Prohibition in the 1920s. Jane also discusses the tale of a ghost named Ellen that has been rumored to haunt the building to this day. We go now to the Manterville Opera House in Manterville, Minnesota.
My name is Jane Olive.
Jane, can you tell me when you became involved with the Opera House here?
Well, I became involved shortly after our daughter got her driver's license, about 6-7 years ago, and I became involved with a theater company first before I became involved with the Manterville Restoration Association that owns the Opera House. So that's got to be about 6-7 years ago then. And then I was part of the group that spearheaded the remodeling of the inside of the Opera House, which we've done quite a bit of remodeling and kind of updating the lighting and making it a little bit more of the jewel that it was always meant to be.
Let's talk about the jewel that it was meant to be.
Yes. Yeah,
you mentioned earlier that the Opera House was built in 1918, and what sorts of different manifestations has it taken over the years?
Oh, it's had many lives. It did start out, it was built as an opera house with the intent that it would be for entertainment for people in this community. But opening in 1918, of course, they anticipated that it would be sort of, that it would have liquors and it would be that type of entertainment. And then shortly thereafter came along Prohibition. And so as a result, nobody really likes to talk about what happened during that period of time, but a lot of the people feel that it at one point, for quite a few years, was probably a speakeasy with illegal liquors being offered here. But then after that, it was a movie theater for a little while, early on with the no talking, you know, just the silent movies. Then it went on to be City Hall. It was a basketball court, a roller rink. Somebody said that there were pink elephants that were painted on the ceiling. That's from some of the old people that are still around that have talked about that. It was a very fun place to be. And then in the late 1980s, the Manterville Restoration Association, that is responsible for keeping Manterville kind of a nice historic community, purchased the Opera House from the city, and they have been wonderful stewards of the beautiful building and making sure that it stays as beautiful as it is. So they are presently the owners. The Manterville Theater Company, who is its main renter, came into being in 1972. And we started doing melodramas, which are a uniquely American theater form. And we continue to do melodramas all summer long here at the Opera House. However, the rest of the year, we do full-length plays. There is one that's going to be starting here the day after Thanksgiving called A Christmas Story. It's the play version of the movie. So that will be very fun, and they're in rehearsal with that right now.
When you do the productions, do you ever do musicals?
Yes.
Okay.
We have. We've done, the melodramas all have music in them.
Okay.
But we did Do Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? We did Uh-Oh, Here Comes Christmas 1 year. And so we've done musicals, or we incorporated music into several other plays.
Now, do you use musicians from the area to accompany for that?
Well, yes. The melodramas always have a pianist.
Ah, great.
And the pianist for the melodrama does three things. They have their own solos, and then they accompany the singers. Plus, they do what we call underplay, which like makes the villain more villainy and makes the heroine more sweet. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, so they're a very important component of the melodrama. When the pianist starts playing, then you know the villain's about ready to come in and do something absurd. So
I love that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Very fun. You'll have to come and try out. The tryouts are always the last Monday and Tuesday in May.
During the different remodels,
yes,
and manifestations, have there been any surprises that people have found?
Well, you know, the Manterville Opera House is very well known for its celestial entity, shall we say.
Okay.
It's quite haunted. Many of the cast members and other people that have spent time in the Opera House have had paranormal experiences, and it's been investigated by quite a few paranormal societies and with very interesting experiences. So that's one of the fun things. The one that is probably the biggest prankster is behind the stage, and she's been dubbed Ellen. And that Ellen came about because in the 1980s, several of this cast members thought that there was just something going on. So they actually used a Ouija board to came up with her name of Ellen. And who Ellen is and what she's doing here is really not known. Some of the paranormal societies feel that she lost a child and she's trying to find her. Oftentimes you will hear rustling, like skirts rustling, as if I were in this long skirt and you would hear me rustling around backstage. But she also has a tendency to sort of steal props.
And there's that certain can be ones problematic.
There's certain ones she likes more than others. She seems to like stick forms. She likes the canes. There was a series of melodramas that were done a few years ago, like one year after the other, where they use these silly horses on sticks, and it was just very goofy, and they would come riding in on their horses. And the director was very upset with the cast that was rehearsing for the next show because she was sure that that cast was stealing her horses to the point where she started taking them home after the production, and the cast is going, we're not touching your stick horses. But they, you know, maybe Ellen was moving them around. They'd always find them somewhere, but they'd be someplace that nobody knew where they were.
Now, being a theater, did you leave something out to appease Ellen before performances? Like some people always leave a program for the person who you cannot see, or maybe some candy, which is what we do at Winona State University for our ghost.
For your ghost?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think we've done that, but one thing that we have learned is that you have to engage them. So when you walk in, you usually just tell them what you're there for.
Okay.
And one in particular investigation that was out in the main part of the theater, which is where we are, the cameras wouldn't work. They were fine. They would be like your camera here. It just wouldn't work. It was either unplugged, but there was nobody that unplugged them until the investigator would say, we don't mean you any harm. Can we take your picture? And then the cameras worked. And that has several of the investigators have discovered that you request them to be a part.
Ellen, we don't mean you any harm.
There you go.
Hey, Ellen.
Hi.
You know, the ones here are not malevolent, and that's kind of what some ghosts are apparently malevolent. Ours are not. In fact, that was one of the first groups that came in here and said, you know, they're not here to hurt you. But I've never been touched by one. I've been in here a lot. I know that my dog, you know, who has been in here when we bring costumes in the back door or something, he just really does not care for this place at all.
He doesn't want to go
no.
in?
No, he wants to go in because he wants to protect me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Sheltie, and so they're very little protective. And, you know, when I was painting in here, I'd sometimes have him in here just for company, and he would pace. I don't know. We did find a mummy of a cat downstairs.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, that came about the same time they found the bottles back there, that several of the investigators had experienced hearing cats meow. I mean, not just one, but several.
Oh, okay.
Several different groups. They say, do you know anything about a cat? And then when we found this mummified cat in the wall, it was kind of creepy.
It was kind of odd and a random object, really, to have around there.
Like he crawled into the wall and died
there. And then it can happen. If the conditions are right,
right,
like it's dry and cool, or mm-hmm. it'll preserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah, it's very creepy.
Yeah, it is creepy. During the remodeling process, you had mentioned that there was a bar here originally. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, I don't know where it went or who took it out. I'm sure it was taken out when it became a roller rink or something where they had to use the entire floor area, but nobody seems to know where it went. There was some talk that it was in a barn someplace west of Manterville, but nobody's been able to chase it down, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, because they're usually big, beautiful.
Yeah, they were huge.
Things.
It was huge.
Yeah. And in the basement, tell me a little bit about the basement and what you have found down there before.
The basement is pretty creepy. I don't really like going down there a whole lot. But last year, there's a wall in the back that some of the brick has pulled away. And some young men crawled back there, and they discovered about 3 feet of old booze bottles back there that had been obviously thrown in there maybe when it was a speakeasy where they wouldn't necessarily want to have anybody knowing that they had bottles of liquor in here.
What have been some of your favorite events?
Some of my favorite events. We've had lots of very fun events. We've had weddings here, and which is really fun to be able to set the stage up looking like a wedding chapel, and you know, it's very beautiful. We had one here last year. It was really very, very beautiful, and that's been very fun. This last spring, there was a Civil War tea that was in here, and all of the seats were taken out, and big round tables were brought in. And everybody that attended, all the ladies that attended the tea, or actually it was a luncheon, it wasn't a tea, were all dressed in Civil War attire. It was really very beautiful, very, very beautiful. And on the 20th of November, there's Christmas tea in here, so all the seats will leave, and they'll be bringing big tables in, and there'll be a Christmas tea in here. That probably about half of the people that will be coming to that will be in Victorian attire, so that'll be fun.
Now, how many people from the community get together to be in these productions, do you think?
The productions are pretty much all casted locally, or at least within the probably 40-mile area. Rochester, of course, but we have a lot of people from the Casson, Manorville, Wasioja, Dodge Center area. Lots of fabulous talent that we have here, so that's really very fun.
It's very important to the community.
Very important to the community, and it's very well attended by local people, as well as we draw people from all over. So we draw people from the Twin Cities as well as Rochester and all over.
What's your favorite thing about the theater?
I think just that it is a community theater. It is a nonprofit community theater, and it is year-round. And so we don't necessarily have a production all the time, but it is a well-respected community theater. And it's very important to the people that live here, and they're very proud of it.
The community theater, I imagine, since it is nonprofit, if any money coming in would be to support the theater, pay for expenses.
Yes, that's right.
And then go into future productions.
Okay. So the Manorville Restoration Association is also nonprofit. It is a 501c3, as well as a theater company is a 501c3. So the theater company rents the opera house. So, I mean, there's money exchange there.
Right.
Yes, so the price of the tickets, you know, goes for the rental of the place, the costuming, the set design, and royalties, whatever else that would cost. And, of course, we are dictated by the nonprofit regulations about how much we can make.
Now, what's with the one-man jail cell out on the side of the...
Isn't that clever? Mm-hmm. I'm not the person that really knows where that exactly originated, but, you know, we don't have a jail here in Manorville. It is the county seat, but we don't have a jail here, and not that anybody's ever been kept in there. However, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, the Restoration House has a jail in the basement, so if they ended up having to hold somebody, they would take it down there and put him in there.
Okay.
Now, that particular one, somebody else might know where that originated from, but...
Yeah, Rose pointed it out, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting, you put the rowdy audience members there.
Yeah, that's right. That sounds like that's a grand idea. We've talked about, you know, putting people in jail and having them buy their way out for fundraisers, but one of these days we'll have to do that. We did actually host the Finance Committee for the State Senate down here before the last bonding session, and we actually brought the jail out and put it in the street and had our local state senators, Dave St. John, in jail.
That's nice.
He appreciated that, primarily because he knew he could get out.
Now, you had said this wasn't the original location, that it had burned down before?
Yes. Well, the Opera House itself is the second building to be on this site.
Okay.
The original building did burn down, yes. So the building that's right next to us, that's adjacent to it, to the west, is older than this one by, probably 40, 50 years.
It is an old town.
1856 is when the town became incorporated.
Right. When did the repainting get done?
That was 6 years ago now.
It's made to look antique.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's nice. And it needs to be dark, too, so it's not, you know.
It's stenciled. It's a five-layer stencil.
That's a pain.
It was. Take my word for it. I did it. So, yes, it was. Thank you.
Your outfit today, you're dressed in...
Yes.
Is it circa 1890 or...?
Probably a little bit earlier than that.
Okay.
This would be something that you probably would have seen somebody wearing in the 1880s, I would say. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that primarily because the hat itself is more of a hat than a bonnet.
Right.
Earlier than that, they still wore bonnets at this particular period of time, but you saw people moving more towards the hats. It is a little bit larger hat, so as it got to be 1890s, it got a little bit smaller and tipped a little bit more forward, a little bit more fussy. And then this would be something that you would have a lady that would be sitting around, probably going out to tea at somebody's home.
We used to have Victorian days in Winona. And I used to bring out my Victorian dress for my grandma. That was her mother's.
We do that here in town quite a bit. And we've gotten a little bit more precise on it because we do the late, what we call a late 1800s. Now, clothing for men didn't really change a whole heck of a lot in that 40, 50 years at the end of the 1800s. But women's clothing changed significantly. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with the change of women's roles in society. Before the Civil War, women, even women up here in the North, where, you know, it's kind of cold around here, were much more fragile, and the skirts were much larger, and if you see any pictures of that era, the shoulders are dropped, so you really don't have much lateral movement of your arms, and they were significantly corseted. Corsets came all the way through, you know, the 1950s, but they got a little bit easier on people. As the Civil War came along and all the men left to go to the war, women started having to do more work. Well, if your arms are down and you can't get them out, then you really can't do much. So you saw that the shoulders started coming up to a more natural shoulder, and you saw skirts getting a little bit flatter in the front, not quite so huge out in front. They were big in the back, the bustle era mm-hmm. and such, but in the front they were much flatter so that you could do stuff.
I need to get to the sink.
Right.
I need to do stuff. And then, of course, when the men came back after the war, in the 1880s, women had kind of gotten used to the fact that they're out and about. So even more so, they have business suits, actually, from the 1880s and 90s. They didn't necessarily do a whole lot of business, but they could, and you could see that they had ties that almost looked like men's ties. The hats became a little bit smaller. And again, if you see pictures from the 1890s, you see women played tennis, they went roller skating, ice skating, they did stuff. Whereas in the 1850s and 60s, that would have not been acceptable.
Right.
So they, you know, see, those gals from the 1890s thought they were really, really liberated. When we are here in town for our events and things, we'll be all corseted and dressed up. But it takes a long time to get dressed. There is a reason why they had people helping them get dressed.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes, you know, my costume studio is right next door, and there might be two or three people in there getting dressed at the same time, and it's a good thing because there's no way that you could get yourself in and out of some of these things. Well, you don't have to tighten them up so you can't breathe.
There was a wasp's waist?
Yes.
Yeah.
The idea was to have it be really small, but your waist really small, but especially when you get to be of a certain age.
Yeah.
You're not expected to have that small. The thing is, too, is that the ladies then, as now, as we've learned in doing some of the, we've had people come in and teach costuming classes and et cetera, is that their clothes were designed and sewn to a certain size. And so all of us go up and down depending on what's going on in our lives. And so if, for example, all your clothes are to a 28-inch waist, as you're getting dressed, you just make it a 28-inch waist.
We thank Jane for taking time out to share the history of the Manterville Opera House. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Don't You Know.
Thanks for listening to Don't You Know. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Don't You Know is produced by KQAL-FM to keep you up to date on the people, places, and events in and around Winona. Visit us online at kqal.org.